Good.
So, we have laid the foundation of the background that we needed to look at, which was, of course, our method of interpretation, how we're going to interpret Scripture literally. No more, no less, right? No more, no less. That's our motto here. The details matter. We've looked at the last years of time, 1,000 years, really it is 1,000 years, believe it or not. That's what it means. Oh, great. It means 1,000 years. So, and the centrality of the Jews. It's the for the Jew first and also for the Gentile principle. We discussed that. So if we try to say that the church, in other words, the Gentiles, are the main thing, it's not going to make sense. But if we understand that God made a promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, He promised to them and their descendants that He would give this kingdom. Remember in Matthew 22, Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like a king who has a son, is going to have this wedding feast. Those who are invited, the Jews, said, nah, we're busy. So then they went out and they called anybody they could find. And some of those people responded. There was a guy in the feast who didn't have a wedding garment on, and he got the boot, right? So whether you were one of the invited, or you were one of the people that was out on the highways and byways, you still had to have a wedding garment on. There was no exception to that. So, and that's why Jesus says, for many are called, but few are chosen. The many that are called are us, the Gentiles. The few that are chosen are the Jews. So that is a very important foundation when we're looking at the coming Messianic kingdom. The next thing we talked about were the fall feasts. There's a couple still to be fulfilled, which are the trumpets, the Day of Atonement, or Yom Kippur, and then tabernacles. And I believe tabernacles is going to last, well, I suppose forever, but at least 1,000 years, where God is dwelling with His people. And then we talked about the image of God, what that is, how we were made in it, how we fell, and be restored. We talked about radio halos, how the corruption is in the very DNA. Not DNA, but it's in the very rocks. It's in the grass. It's in everything. Everything is corrupted, and that was based on Romans chapter 8, verses 19 through 22. Okay, so that's where we've gotten so far. That's where we've gotten. So now we're looking at the shaking of the heavens and earth, and also the day of the Lord. And, well, let's just jump in, I guess, and look at these verses. You should have the packet there. So again, with all of that we've just summarized, using the literal interpretation method, we're going to look at all these things. And, of course, we talked about biblical triangulation, where we use, you know, lots of verses to establish a point, not just one. We use a lot. And so this whole thing, this packet, I put together over probably, I don't know, 6 months. I was working on this thing. And I titled it, An Examination of the Kingdom That Lasts Forever, Even Forever and Ever. And I'm taking that from Daniel 7:18. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Now, if we look at Revelation chapter 12, we look at Revelation chapter 12, what we find is this great sign in heaven John sees. And so he's got this great sign in heaven. He sees a woman clothed of the sun, the moon under her feet, and a head on her head, a garland of 12 stars. So we understand this to be referring to Israel, because we find this in Genesis chapter, I think, 37, if I remember correctly. So, where, remember, Joseph has the dream, right? He's got the dream. He says, the sun, moon, and 11 stars bow down to me. So this is talking about Israel. And of course, we see here that she was with child. She gave birth. And then this great fiery red dragon wants to kill her, which is, of course, Satan. He takes a third of the stars with him. He's trying to devour the child. The child was caught up to God in his throne. That is, of course, the Lord Jesus. Then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. So this is talking about the Jews. You see that? She's going to be protected. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon and his angels fought. Well, where do we find that? We find this in Daniel chapter 12. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. There shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who's found written in the book. So Michael is the chief prince. He's the archangel over the people of Israel. And he's going to stand up in the last days to protect them, because this great battle is going to break out. Sure enough, we see it in Revelation chapter 12. The battle breaks out. Why? Because Satan wants to destroy the Jews. That's kind of his big purpose. So, of course, he doesn't prevail. He's pretty ticked. And it says here, now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Well, of course, again, that's speaking of Jesus as the male child. Israel is that woman. She was given the wings of a great eagle. She goes into the wilderness for 3.5 years. The earth helps her. And the dragon was enraged with the woman. He went to make war against the rest of her offspring. All right. So again, this is talking about the Jews. Now it says, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. It could be that these are Messianic Jews. It's very much a possibility. But looking back in Daniel chapter 7, which is where I have that quote from, what we find here is this battle is going on. So you got this little horn. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots, and there in his horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. So this is the Antichrist who comes on the scene to try to destroy the saints of the Most High. And the saints, we find, are the Jews. Okay, they're the Jews. So where else do we see that? Well, the saints are going to receive the kingdom. And it says right here, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. We find that in Revelation 13:7. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. That's not talking about the Gentiles in general. We know that there's going to be, you know, tribulation, right? There's no question about that. But this is all about the Jews. So he's talking about the Jews. Both Daniel and Revelation are talking about Satan's attack on the Jews. Until the Ancient of Days came and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. You see there again? So if I go back to my key verse here, but the saints, so in other words, but the Jews, or the believing Israelites, if you will, of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Now, how long do you think that is? Any thoughts on that? Maybe 1,000 years. How about that? It ends at 1,000 years. What do you think? It sounds like God's trying to say, you know, it's like forever, you know, like seriously, dude, forever. I mean, I don't know how else he could say it. Forever, even forever and ever and ever and ever and ever without end or something. I mean, I don't know. What could he possibly say? So this kingdom that is given to the Jews will go on forever. So this is our first thing. If we take the traditional position, which is that the millennium lasts for 1,000 years and then it gets, you know, blown to bits at the end and he makes a new one, then it sounds like it goes on for 1,000 years and it stops at that point. But to me, this really sounds like it's going to start and it's never going to end.
There's no pause.
Yeah, there are milestones along the way, but there's no end to it. Even forever, forever, even forever and ever. So to me, that seems like very significant language. And then what we find is our first point. The first heavens and the first earth will be decimated and will not rise again. Things will be shaken and will flee away in the day of the Lord, that is before the millennium comes. Right? So we're still, these verses are all centered on the tribulation. And we have to kind of ease into our millennium by looking at the tribulation. We have to consider these things. So I've done my best to put these in two columns, the Old Testament on the left side, New Testament on the right side, so that we can compare them and we can see that the language is in many cases identical, other cases it's very close, and certainly thematically they're the same. So Isaiah, I mean, oh man, what an amazing chapter. Let's just read the whole chapter. I told you guys to be reading the Bible. What more do you want? It's fun. All right. Behold, the Lord makes the earth empty and makes it waste, distorts its surface and scatters abroad its inhabitants. And it's going to be with, you know, all these different people. The land shall be entirely emptied and utterly plundered, for the Lord has spoken this word. The earth mourns and fades away. The world languishes and fades away. The haughty people of the earth languish. The earth is also defiled under its inhabitants because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore the curse has devoured the earth, and those who dwell in it are desolate. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men are left. The new wine fails, the vine languishes, all the merry-hearted sigh. The mirth of the tambourine ceases, the mirth of the jubilee ends, the joy of the harp ceases. They shall not drink strong wine, etc. Let me just skip down a little bit here. It's getting very poetic and stuff, which doesn't mean it's not true, it's just poetic. So fear and the pit and the snare are upon you, O inhabitant of the earth. This is pretty radical, don't you think? And it shall be that he who flees from the noise of the fear shall fall into the pit. He who comes up from the midst of the pit shall be caught in the snare, for the windows from on high are open, and the foundations of the earth are shaken. The earth is violently broken, the earth is split open, the earth is shaken exceedingly. Now what if we were just to take that literally? What kind of picture do we have here? I mean, it's an earthquake for sure, but this is a massive earthquake, right? And in fact, he doesn't stop there. He says, the earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard. You've probably seen a drunk at some point, you know. He can barely walk. It shall totter like a hut. Its transgression shall be heavy upon it, and it will fall and not rise again. And that, this chapter right here is very, very powerful. Because this is a tribulation chapter. This is the great tribulation right here, as God revealed it to Isaiah. So as we look at that, and we compare it, it will fall and not rise again. And then what we find after that, it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord will punish on high the host of exalted ones, and on the earth the kings of the earth. You see this dichotomy? You've got these kings that are these the host of exalted ones over here, and over here you've got the kings of the earth. Interesting, isn't it? So they're contrasting one another. You got earthly kings and you've got these other host kings, if you will. What do we read in Ephesians 6:12? For we war not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, right? Rulers of spiritual darkness. So that is who we're talking about. And look what happens to them. They will be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit and will be shut up in the prison. After many days will be punished. Then the moon will be disgraced and the sun ashamed, for the Lord of hosts will reign on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem before his elders gloriously. Wow. So this is talking about the end of the tribulation, the beginning point of the millennium, somewhere in there. Now remember that there's going to be a 75-day interval between the end of the tribulation to the setting up of the kingdom. Because we read about the 1,260 days, and then in Daniel chapter 12 it says, blessed are those who make it to the 1,335th day. So there's this period of 75 days. I interpret that to be the time of the judgment. This is when the Lord has come back. He is judging the inhabitants of the earth. Maybe he's, you know, making the new heavens and new earth at this point. I don't know entirely. But there's something significant happening in that period. And I would suggest that it's Matthew 25, the sheep and the goats, which is also the same as Joel 3:2, the judgment of the nations. So, if we compare that language, immediately before the tribulation, after the tribulation of those days, the sun would be dark and the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. I generally understand the powers of the heavens to be referring to the demonic host. That's what I would see there. I don't think it's celestial bodies. I don't think it's stars way out in the universe. It's interesting that there are over a million pieces of space junk floating around in space. But I don't think it's the space junk either. I don't think that's what it is. The powers of the heavens will be shaken. Who are the powers? Well, Satan and all his hosts. They're going to be shaken. That's the same of the host of exalted ones right here. Let's look at some other verses. Oh, that you would rend the heavens, that you would come down, that the mountains might shake at your presence. They shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth from the terror of the Lord and the glory of His majesty when He rises to shake the earth mightily. Let me see if I can't make this bigger. Therefore I will shake the heavens and the earth will move out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts and in the day of His fierce anger. If we look at the passages from Hebrews, then His voice shook the earth, but now He has promised, I will once more shake not only the earth, but heaven too. Now this phrase once more indicates the removal of what is shaken, that is, of created things, so that what is unshaken may remain. That's interesting. And I don't claim to have fully understood that. Then the second angel poured out his bowl on the sea, and it became blood as of a dead man. Every living creature in the sea died. Then the third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and springs of water, and they became blood. And the fourth angel poured out his bowl on the sun, and the power was given to him to scorch men with fire. For they are spirits of demons performing signs which go out to the kings of the earth and of the whole earth world to gather them to the battle of the great day of God. And there were noises and thunderings and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such a mighty and great earthquake as had not occurred since men were on the earth. Then every island fled away, and the mountains were not found, and great hail from heaven fell upon men, each hailstone about the weight of a talent. Men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, since the plague was exceedingly great. This is a pretty radical time here. So we're going to have the heavens and earth are going to be shaken. We see that every island is going to flee away. The mountains will not be found. Think about that geologically for a second. I mean, we've all, I think, experienced an earthquake. We had one here just a couple days ago. That was a 3.5. That was just a baby earthquake. Right? Now imagine every island, Hawaii, boom, gone. Okay? You know, every island is going to be gone. Every mountain, Mount Everest, gone. This is going to be a pretty radical change that's coming upon the earth. I mean, it's going to change drastically. And this is when, the men on the earth start to go and hide. But there's more. It says, all the hosts of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled up like a scroll. all their host shall fall down as the leaf falls from the vine, and as fruit falling from a fig tree. Well, this is the same language that we find in Revelation chapter 6. And the stars of heaven fell to the earth as a fig tree drops its late figs when it is shaken by a mighty wind. Then the sky receded as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place, and the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, "Fall on us, hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of his wrath has come." Looking in Isaiah chapter 2, "Enter into the rock and hide in the dust from the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty. The lofty looks of man shall be humbled, the haughtiness of man shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. For the Lord of hosts shall come upon everything proud and lofty, upon everything lifted up, and it shall be brought low upon all the cedars of Lebanon that are high and lifted up, upon all the oaks of Bashan, upon all the high mountains and upon all the hills that are lifted up, upon every high tower and upon every fortified wall, upon all the ships of Tarshish and upon all the beautiful sloops. The loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of man shall be brought low. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day, but the idols he shall utterly abolish. They shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth from the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty when he arises to shake the earth mightily." You see what I'm talking about? How we have to go back and not only take Revelation, but we've got to look at Isaiah and the Old Testament as well. We've got to look at all the scriptures. Because when we look at all the scriptures and we pair them together, or we triangulate, so to speak, then we get, oh, this is what we're talking about. And it's basically, God was giving a revelation to the men of old, and then he's giving more details. There's a cool verse in Ephesians 3, 9, and 10. And it says, "And to make all see what is the fellowship of the mystery, which from the beginning of the ages has been hidden in God, who created all things through Jesus Christ, to the intent that now the manifold wisdom of God might be made known by the church to the principalities and powers in the heavenly places." You see that? And those same principalities we read about, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." So God and Satan are having this chess match. God knows all the moves, and Satan is doing his best to calculate them, as a good chess player would. It's a completely an unfair game. But, you know, Satan signed up for it. So God says, okay. Boom. He moves. You know, and Satan's scrambling to make his move. God knows every move, but he's not going to reveal them before his time. And now he's using the church to reveal what's going to happen to the principalities and powers. Don't you love that? I mean, wow. To the principalities and powers, this is radical stuff. Where he is, you know, we're being used whether we know it or not, and he's now revealing secrets. So what he had partly revealed before, or he'd revealed, but it hadn't really been come into focus, now we have the rest of the story, and just like that triangulation principle, now we can say, okay, I've got this point, and I've got this point, and I've got this point. Now I can plot my position. Whereas before it was somewhat difficult, but now it's much easier because we have more points to plot our position. So as we're looking at this, we see here the same language. And Marty, did you pass out those? If you could. We talked about this last week, but I just wanted to now give you guys a copy. I decided to make a comparison of seals, trumpets, and bowls from the book of Revelation, and I just thought I would just plot them. There's nothing mysterious here. I just put them in a chart so that it's much easier to see, because I kept going through Revelation. I'm like, man, it sounds like I heard this before. You know? Could it be? And until they're next to each other, it's really hard to see. But once they're next to each other, oh man, it just becomes... To me, it seems like a no-brainer. But I'll let you guys decide. So what I did is I put the seals, trumpets, and bowls. And I think what's happening, if I write this on the board, what I kind of see happening is, if this is the full time of the tribulation, I see the seals more or less kind of happening like that. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So these are your seals. And then I would suggest that the trumpets and the bowls somewhere start after seal 5. Start with basically seal 6. And so seal 6, it's kind of a summary of what's happening, and then we see more detail as that's played out in those others. And a pretty important clue we find in Revelation chapter 10, where you remember that John has to eat that little book, and it says that it's bitter in his stomach. It was yummy in his mouth, but it was bitter. And he says, go, take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel who stands on the sea and on the earth. He says, take it and eat it, and it will make your stomach bitter, but it will be as sweet as honey in your mouth. And so he does that. It's bitter. He said to me, you must prophesy again about many peoples, nations, tongues, and kings. So what seems to be happening here is that what happens in Revelation 1 through 10 is sort of the first go-over to some extent. And then we seem to have he kind of tells the story again. What happened to Marty? They should just be in the printer. Anyway. So, we'll just go ahead and look at these. So now when I saw the Lamb open one of the seals, and I looked, a white horse. So these don't necessarily seem to correspond to anything. But look at the trumpets and the bowls. The trumpets and the bowls, and a third of the grass, the trees, and burned up, and all the grass was burned up. And then if you look at the bowl, he pours out this thing, and it got these. Those who have the mark have this loathsome sore. And then the second, a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Well, in the second bowl, we find that he pours his bowl on the sea. It became blood as of a dead man, and every living creature in the sea died. So it seems like we got these sliders on a mixer, where you first turn it up by a third to see if anybody's going to repent. And basically nobody seems to repent. And so then God turns up the volume full blast. That seems to be the difference between the trumpets and the bowls. It's a matter of magnitude. It's not so much a different judgment. It seems to be the same judgment, but there's a difference in magnitude between them. The third angel sounded, a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. And then the third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and springs of water, and they became blood. Again, we got kind of the same thing going on here. Then the fourth seal, again, I don't know if I can make any correlation with that. It doesn't seem like I can, so I'm not going to try. But then the trumpets and the bowls, again, a third of the sun was struck, and then he poured out his bowl on the sun. Interesting. Then we come to the fifth. The fifth angel sounded, and a star fell from heaven. So he opened the bottomless pit, and the smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. And then in the fifth bowl, then the fifth angel poured out his bowl on the throne of the beast, and his kingdom became full of darkness. You see that? So the darkness is there in both places. One is dark because of this smoke that comes out. The other one, we're just told that it becomes dark. And again, they did not repent. Then notice in the sixth trumpet, he says, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. So the four angels who have been prepared for the hour and the day, etc. Then the bowl, the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up so that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. So they both involve the great river Euphrates. Then when we get to the sixth seal, the seventh angel trumpet, and then the seventh bowl, we find really the same things are happening. So looking at the seal, I looked when he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth hair, and the moon became like blood, and the stars of heaven fell to the earth as a fig tree drops its figs when it is shaken by a mighty wind. Then the sky receded as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place, and the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man hid themselves in the caves and the rocks of the mountains, and, you know, fallen us from the face of the Lamb. It sounds like Jesus is coming right there, doesn't it? I mean, to me, he's coming. For the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand? Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it to the earth. And there were noises, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. That's actually from Revelation 8, which is the end of that seal. It's at the end of that's the seventh seal. So that, notice there, again, we're looking for these anchor points. There were noises, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. Do we find that same language? We sure do. Look at the seventh trumpet. And there were loud voices in heaven saying, "The kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." It sounds like we're kind of at the end of the game here. "The nations were angry, and your wrath has come, and the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that you should reward your servants, the prophets and the saints, and those who fear your name, small and great, and should destroy those who destroy the earth." Then the temple of God was opened in heaven, and the ark of his covenant was seen in his temple. And there were lightnings, noises, thunderings, and earthquake, and great hail. Then looking at the seal, the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and a loud voice came out from the temple of heaven, from the throne, saying, "It is done." And there were noises and thunderings and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such a mighty and great earthquake as had not occurred since men were on the earth. Now the great city was divided, etc. Then every island fled away, and the mountains were not found, and great hail from heaven fell upon men, each hailstone about the weight of a talent. So, I mean, that's, you know, this really sounds like we have, they're not consecutive, but they're congruent. They're happening at the same time, at least the latter, the last two seals, and the trumpets, and the bull. Thoughts, questions, comments, rebuttal. Yes.
Rebuttal?
Yes, please. It's now or never.
I think that some of these things you said are going to be hard to defend when you really get people attacking you.
Okay.
So let me ask you a preliminary question.
Yes.
When is the second death?
When is the second death?
Yeah, in the timeline.
In other words, like the Great White Throne? Is that what you're saying? I was hoping to cover that in a later chapter.
but you're in trouble if you... it's in Revelation 20, you have a lot of words that indicate that that's the first...
That's the first what?
It's the first of the millennium instead of end of the millennium.
Yeah.
And that includes the second death.
What language exactly?
English.
I know, but what words are you thinking of?
Blessed and holy is he that has part of the first.
Yeah.
And I got these notes in the middle, such that the second death has no power.
Okay.
But to me, everything that I'm seeing in Revelation 20 is at the end of the millennium instead of the first.
Okay.
Including the second death, because if you didn't have it at the end, then those who did not accept Christ during the 1,000 years,
yeah,
would be kind of late.
Yeah.
You'd have to have another quite through judgment for them if you had it already at the first.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit.
Okay. Well, thank you for the rebuttal. Let's think about that. Does my thesis stand? That's the question. Okay. Maybe it doesn't. You know, that's fine. If we get to the end of the class and it doesn't, so be it. Right? But I'll do my best to defend it. So,
why do your best to defend it? But why don't you do your best just to find out what's really true?
Well, that's what I'm doing. No, that's what I mean. I am. Right, but
it's,
you know,
hard-headed and won't never change.
You remember when you were
here.
No, she will.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, of course, we're seeking truth, right? We're seeking the truth. I just happen to have an idea that I think is what the real reality is. So, because I'm in the minority position, I have to defend my position too. The rest of everybody else, okay?
And it'll be a tough battle.
I agree, but it could be fun.
So when was the second death?
All right, well, the second death, I mean, what we find in Corinthians 15, 1 Corinthians 15, verse, I think, 24, oops. Then comes the end when he delivers the kingdom to God the Father, when he puts an end to all rule and all authority and power. So I would presume this is talking about the millennium. Okay, so so the kingdom has been established now. It's been going on for 1,000 years. And now at the end of the 1,000 years, apparently, he's going to deliver it to God the Father, whatever that means, when he puts an end to all rule and all authority and power. For he must reign, that is Jesus, till he's put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy that will be destroyed is death. For he's put all things under his feet, but when he says all things are put under him, it is evident that he who has put all things under him is accepted. And when all things are made subject to him, then the Son himself will also be subject to him who put all things under him, that God may be all in all. That's, you know, it's quite fascinating what's going on there. Well, at some point, Jesus the Son is going to be in a submissive position, if you will, if that's the right word, to God the Father. I don't know why, but that's what it says. You know, sometimes we ask, well, why? I don't know.
But it's all part of the same thing.
We're dealing with what is. Okay. Now, the other thing to answer your question is we can't ignore Daniel chapter 7. So here we have, I watched till thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was white, was like pure wool. His throne a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. Fire stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books are open. What does that sound like to you?
It sounds like it could be the one of the first of the millennium. Because a lot of people are going to have to stand before the Ancient of Days at that point, too.
Okay. So,
that isn't the last judgment.
Well, when we say the last judgment, where does it say the last judgment?
The white throne, is that what you're talking about?
To me, the white throne, to me, this whole Revelation 20 is about the end of the tribulation.
Okay. Well, see, you said it was the last judgment. I don't remember the text saying it's the last judgment. You know? What John is seeing is a series of revelations, a series of visions. He gives them to us in the order that he saw them. Do we agree with that? But we don't know if he gives them to us in the order that they're going to happen.
Never thought of it like that.
Okay? We just don't know that. And again, what we see, what seems to be a principle in Scripture, is that we're given the bird's eye picture, the overview, and then we back up and we look at the details. Genesis chapter 1, all 7 days. Genesis chapter 2, just day 6. We come to Revelation chapter 16. Oops, not 19. Get my numbers in there. Okay. So now the city was divided in three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Okay, and then every island fled away, etc. Wow. We get one verse. We get one little thing about, and great Babylon was remembered before God. You know, he's going to judge her. Oh, well, okay. But then guess what? Chapters 17 and 18 are all about who? They're all about Babylon, aren't they? So we have the same thing happening in Revelation 20, where we get the bird's eye picture, the big overview, thousand years, yeah, Satan's going to be bound. And then in 21 and 22, we get supporting details. We get supporting details. Now, while we're here, let's just check out verse 11. Because I think this will help calm your fears. Should I believe this Doug guy or not? Could be out there on a limb. And this took me some time to just think about this one. Because I'm like, what do I do with this verse? Then I saw a great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, and there was no place found for them. What does that sound like? It sounds like, hey, this must be happening after the 1,000 years, because now heaven and earth are going to flee away. And that's why you have people, when they come to 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10, where it says, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat, both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. They would say, well, this is stretching over 1,000 years. Even though it says that the heavens will pass away, in which what? In that day, the day of the Lord, when he comes as a thief in the night. So it's not at the end of the 1,000 years, according to Peter, but because we know about Revelation 20, verse 11, we're saying, well, I have to interpret Peter in light of Revelation. But let me suggest this to you. First of all, you know, this is where one of these times you got to go back to the Greek to see what's going on here. Because this word fled is what we call an aorist. It's a simple past. So that kind of gives us some little bit of freedom. So it's a simple past. It's past tense. How can you translate an aorist? Well, there's various ways you can do that. And I put that on the handout that I gave you there in the footnotes. If you check that out, let's see here.
I saw what you wrote down, but that does that mean it has to be interpreted that way?
It does not have to be.
Okay, because all the rest of the chapter would be just the opposite of that. All the rest of that chapter looks like the end of it.
Well, I still think that's a matter of conditioning. I don't think that that's the case at all. And if we look at the rest of the Bible, then...
Let me cross-examine you.
Please. Well, let me finish this. So, listen here. This is according to Burton's Greek grammar. The constant characteristic of the aorist tense in all of its moods, including the participles, that it represents the action denoted by it indefinitely, simply as an event, neither on the one hand picturing it in progress, nor on the other affirming the existence of its result. All right? And then he also goes on, the aorist for the English pluperfect. The aorist indicative is frequently used in narrative passages as a past event which precedes another past event mentioned or implied in the context.
That's not really enough to throw out the whole logic of the 20th chapter.
Well, it's enough to make a good case, though. It's enough to make a good case. So what can be happening here is it's from whose face earth and heaven fled away. It's not that it's necessarily happening. It's not that, you know, John's seeing this, and here comes the one on the white throne, and then heaven and earth, whew, right? But he's telling us a description of who this one is, and his feature characteristic, right? Or his specific feature, whatever. Just like if I'm in the mall and I say, you know, I saw the music star, you know, the one that won the. Or the Emmys, or what is it? Whatever they win, you know, or the movie star who won the Grammy. Okay, like, oh, okay, that one. So that's something that's a characteristic feature of that person. So we're talking about the one which there's several thrones up there, right? Revelation chapter 20. There are several thrones. I'm giving the floor back to you in a second. And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. So there are thrones.
But not God's white throne.
Oh, no, well, they're thrones.
Yeah.
So then he sees a great white throne. Okay, so what's so special about this one compared to the other ones? Yeah, well, the one sitting on this one is the one from whose face the earth and heaven flood away. Okay, go down.
On the great white throne judgment, would you agree that the second, those in the second resurrection are even the ones that have died at the great white throne judgment? Because we got in Daniel that everyone's going to be in either the first or second resurrection.
Yeah. So the question again?
Is the great white throne judgment the final judgment of those who've already been in hell and all those who are in the second resurrection?
I don't know.
Well, then you have to. where would you judge the ones you don't know about?
Well, let me be a good Jew and ask you another question. Guys, jump in, okay? Please. So
you are going to find try to answer that, though.
Of course, I'm working on it. All right, Matthew 25. Well, let's draw a little timeline here.
Put the quantum leap at the end of the fast.
Oh, I know.
We were making quantum leap at the end of that. Okay.
Well, this,
does it have a break on it?
I don't know. We got to do something about this.
It's a break on the wheel.
What break means?
Something to flip.
I don't know. There might be something to stick behind it or something. Anyway, so here's the second coming. All right, here comes Jesus on the clouds. We've got this 75-day interval, which presumably a lot of these things are going to happen. But what does he do in Matthew 25? Matthew 25, you got the separation of the sheep and the goats. Right?
During that period right there.
Right. I believe it's in the 75-day interval.
Sure.
And then the millennium is set up, somewhere here.
So the sheep go into a millennium?
Yeah, the sheep go into the millennium. And what happens to the goats?
They probably go to hell.
To the pit right now.
Well, where is that?
It's not on earth.
Where the Antichrist and the
Do they go to this place called Hades?
No,
or do they go into Gehenna?
It's not the lake of fire.
Not yet.
It's a holding place.
It's just a holding place.
A place where you can put a seal on them and you can't get out.
Okay.
But they're out of the picture as far as the living on earth for 1,000 years.
Oh, okay. Good man.
Thank you. Yeah, that'll do it. Okay. So, but look where it says. It says, then he will say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels.
Where does it say that?
Verse 41. Right there. So, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. And then he says it again.
But that's not the lake of fire.
How do we know that?
Well, hell is not very comfortable. They talk about a lot of heat there.
It's an awful place, but
yeah.
I mean, we have basically two places that we understand.
Because Hades is emptied and thrown into the lake of fire.
Okay.
So there's a sequence.
But so what do these people? I mean, are they dumped into the lake of fire later?
Yeah.
I thought the first two in were the Antichrist and the false prophet.
Oh, they are. Yeah. We know about that from days or
so
hours before. Revelation 19:19, it says, the beast is captured, and with him the false prophet who works signs in his presence, and these two were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone.
So are you saying the goats, and maybe you're probably
at that time go into the lake of fire?
Do the goats start making sure that the false prophet and the Antichrist aren't going to be alone then for that 1,000 years?
Well, yeah, we've generally assumed that they're going to,
be alone,
have a private suite for 1,000 years.
Yes, but this indicates maybe not.
Well, it that's what seems to be saying.
You hit that lake of fire, you're done.
Yeah,
isn't that
well,
the final?
Yeah, that's your final destiny,
He's got a heck of a good point here.
Yeah.
And then if you look at Daniel 7, says, then I watched because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. So this is Gehenna.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. As for the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season of time. So these other beasts, these demons and Satan, are thrown into the pit. Okay, they're thrown into the pit for 1,000 years. But the beast and the false prophet are thrown immediately into the lake of fire. Yeah, it's done and over. Okay. Now, what is this place? Well, Jesus said that it was prepared for Satan and his angels. And we read in Isaiah 24, Isaiah 30, verse 33, for Tophet was established of old, yes, for the king it is prepared. He has made it deep and large. Its pyre is fire with much wood. The breath of the Lord, like a stream of brimstone, kindles it. So this is what was prepared for Satan and his angels. And if you look at Jeremiah 7:31, and they have built the high places of Tophet, which is in the valley of the son of Gehinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I did not command, nor did it come into my heart. So the valley of Hinnom is Gehenna. This is it.
But that's just the Malthus type, getting rid of the babies type thing, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. It says Tophet was established of old. Tophet and Gehenna are the same place. And then you got to look at Isaiah 66:24. They shall go forth and look upon the corpses of the men who have transgressed against me, for their worm does not die and their fire is not quenched. They shall be in horrors to all flesh. That's the same language that that Jesus uses, where he says it's better to cut off your hand than to go into the hellfire, which is the word Gehenna there. Where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. So, you know, I've just been rethinking this. I'm thinking, well, you know, is it that, you know, everyone's collected first into Hades and then they're dumped at the end at the Great White Throne? Or is it that people go there, you know, little here, little there, and people go there at different times? It's not that everyone's just kind of waiting there to be judged, but they are judged. And it says that all judgment has been committed to the Lord Jesus.
I don't think it's going to be enough to get you out of this.
Well, I've got more.
Well, but you haven't answered this question yet about... the last enemy is death. But how late are they still having death?
All the way through the millennium.
All the way through the millennium.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those who die towards the end have missed the white throne judgment?
No. What I'm thinking is that the white throne judgment is God's white throne. He just happens to sit on it. Now, look what's happening. When you come into God's presence, it may not be a very pleasant experience.
Are you saying it's a process?
I know what you're trying to say. You're saying this is going on the entire time.
Yeah.
It's not showing one activity.
Exactly.
It's just...
Yeah.
And if you're uncovered, you die.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a continuous process.
It's a process instead of an event.
I would say it seems to be a continuous process. Court is always open.
Because there's a lot of events that have to take place and we can't sequence them.
Yeah. And of course, with God, he's good at doing multiple things. He's multitasking, you know. So, but notice here, a fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. All right? So that fire that's coming out of God, when you come into contact with that, it's lights out, right? But you're not just left there to be tormented, you know, in his presence right there, but you're segregated to this place called Tophet. And if you look in Revelation 14:10, because those who take the mark, he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. So we see that. We see in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 9, these shall be punished with everlasting destruction from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his power. The Greek word there for from is apo. Apo can mean to separate yourself from. But it can also mean on account of or by virtue of. For example, he died from hypothermia. Okay? What killed him? Hypothermia. So their destruction It's not that they're separated from God. No, no. Their destruction is by virtue of the presence of the Lord. That's what's actually destroying them. It's being in God's presence. They can't get away. Right? And they don't have their garment of salvation on. And what is it to them? It's absolute torment.
But they're not separated yet from God.
There is no separation. There's no separation. It's exposure that kills you. Well, you know, torments you. It's the exposure. Now, there's this place called Tophet. We read about it in Isaiah 66. That there on the earth, apparently, they shall go forth and look. Look at, from one Sabbath to another, he says. For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, says the Lord. So shall your descendants and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, all flesh shall come to worship before me, says the Lord. They shall go forth and look upon the corpses of the men who transgress against me, for their worm does not die and their fire is not quenched. They shall be in horse and all flesh. Where is this happening? This isn't like in, you know, the other side of the galaxy. It's apparently right here on earth. And this is the same language that Jesus uses to talk about Gehenna. So, and yeah. I mean, this is happening right then and there. So we can't just throw out this verse or do as some of the commentators, well, I think Isaiah was confused.
Oh, well.
Nonsense! God wasn't confused.
I think I know
who's the confused party. It's the commentator. Yeah.
That isn't what Walford said.
No, not Walford.
No.
No, Kyle and Dalich. Okay. They said that Isaiah was confused. Yeah. Well, we should take a little break here, a little hafsakah. So. All right, round one is done. Ding!
One question.
Yes?
Well, everybody feels free to go restroom now. I just was wondering about this, the 1,000 years, the people that are left on this earth, you know, us hopefully will be in the heavens, right? But
during the millennium?
During the millennium. The people left on the earth.
Yeah.
Those people, now what kind of state is this person? And then Satan is bound for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
So he's kind of contained. But man is not, and these people on earth has not received Jesus.
Correct.
They're good people.
Right.
They were kind to the Jews,
right.
Them water,
right.
Food, whatever. But they have not received Christ. So what state are they restored back to? Are they like pre? But they can't be pre-fall.
Well, let's see. That is, what week is that?
Oh.
I mean, we can jump ahead, but you know, no, it's fun. I mean, I wish I could answer it all at once. You know, I'll give you the quick answer is that we're not up in heaven. Heaven has come down.
We're not, the Christians are not up in heaven?
Where's heaven?
On earth, I guess.
It's the New Jerusalem, right? Right. So to get into the New Jerusalem, you got to meet the requirements. That's true.
Okay.
But once you get into, once you're granted access, it says, "Blessed are those who keep my commandments, that they may enter into the city through the gates and have the right to the tree of life." So, the tree of life and the river of life are going to be what's going to restore people. Well, let's take a break. Yeah.
But those are the ones that got into the city.
Well, maybe we should.
Keep on going.
Yeah, maybe we should keep on going because I think as We're gonna take a whole day and when we get to November 14th, we'll talk about the different judgments. I have them all listed for us. And I think as we go through the class, maybe some of the questions will be answered, you know, hopefully. Yeah, maybe we'll keep working on our timeline, okay? We're doing this together, guys.
I think you're going to raise more questions than you
have. Well, good. Then we will have learned something. All right, so we let's see here. So we talk about the shaking. All right, now we're looking at Habakkuk. Well, let me start there in 2 Peter 3:10. I'll read it again. Just we've talked about it, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. Right? So the day of the Lord is described as coming very suddenly, unexpectedly. Paul tells us in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, he says, "Brethren, you have no need that I should write to you concerning the day of the Lord, for yourselves know that it will come as a thief." Or, "You have no need that I should write to you concerning the times and the seasons, for you yourselves know that the day of the Lord will come as a thief of the night to those who are in darkness." Right? "But you are not in darkness, for that to overtake you as a thief, for you are all sons of the light." Jesus says here in Revelation chapter 3, "Remember therefore how you received and heard, hold fast, repent. Therefore, if you will not watch, I will come upon you as a thief, and you will not know what hour I come upon you." So the whole thief thing is for those that aren't looking. It's for the world, the non-believer. "Behold, I am coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame." And there, Paul says again, "For you yourselves know the perfect of the day of the Lord, so comes as a thief in the night. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of the darkness." So this day is coming. We're told to watch. Jesus says, watch. If the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, you know he'd be ready. "Watch, therefore. You neither know the day nor the hour when the Son of Man is coming." We say that the great day is coming. These demons have been reserved under these chains of darkness for the great day. And then we read back in Habakkuk. He stood and surveyed the earth. He looked and startled the nations. If you're startled, you weren't expecting it, right? You're like, "Whoa, I didn't see that coming." Right? That's like the thief in the night thing. "Yes, the perpetual mountains were shattered. The ancient hills collapsed. His ways are everlasting." So Habakkuk is talking about the same thing, the return of the king. But he gives us all... We find lots of details of what it's going to look like when Jesus comes back. The New Testament gives us very little, actually. The Old Testament is just chocked full of it, of the descriptions of what it's going to look like, what he's going to do. "Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give the light, the sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud and lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I will make a mortal more rare than fine gold, a man more than the gold wedge of Ophir. And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness, the moon into blood, before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. Multitudes, multitudes in the day, valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon will grow dark, and the stars will diminish their brightness. The Lord also will roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem. The heavens and earth will shake. But the Lord will be a shelter for his people, and the strength of the children of Israel." Interesting. Maybe people have been asking me, well, how is it going to be if the heavens and earth are recreated at the beginning? How is it that those who remain on the earth won't be destroyed with it? Well, it says the Lord will be a shelter for his people and the strength of the children of Israel. So whoever is Israel or is with Israel is going to be protected. Seems to be the case. So this day of the Lord thing is when he's going to actually destroy the earth, because the earth is destroyed by virtue of the plagues that come upon it and by virtue of his return. So again, just to kind of press the point here, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. So as we were, you know, discussing Revelation 20, verse 11, I saw a great white throne, and him was seated on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away. Well, when did it flee away? Well, when he came back. That's when those things fled away. And that's what we keep seeing in the text, that the heavens are going to be shaken, the earth is going to be shaken, they're going to pass away. The Lord coming with fire. Isaiah 66, for behold, the Lord will come with fire, and with his chariots like a whirlwind, to render his anger with fury, and his rebuke with flames of fire. For by fire and by his sword the Lord will judge all flesh, and the slain of the Lord shall be many. And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. There again in Joel. 2 Thessalonians. And to give you who are troubled rest with us when the Lord Jesus is revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire, taking vengeance on those who do not know God and on those who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. How is he going to come back? With fire, yeah? Now, is that just allegorical, figurative kind of talk?
No.
You know, it's just figurative language, you know? No, it's literal. God is a flaming fire, right? Our God is a consuming fire. What did we see in Ezekiel? That he saw above the cherubim, above the firmament, says he saw the likeness of a throne, and on the likeness of a throne he saw the likeness of Adam, high above it. And from his waist upward, the appearance of electricity mingled with fire. And from his waist down, the same thing. Fire. What does Daniel say? The fiery stream issued from before him. Remember, this is why we can't hang out with God right now?
Yeah.
Because you get zapped and you get burnt. And that's what's going to happen to the unbeliever. Is they're going to get just tormented. There's nowhere to hide anymore. This is why the men go into the caves of the rocks and they say, fall on us from the terror of the Lord, from the face of the Lamb, because he's coming back. This is why the children of Israel said, Moses, you go up the mountain. We're not stupid, right? You go. We're going to stay down here. Because what was happening to that mountain? It was smoking. It was on fire. That's what happens when the holy, righteous, uncorrupted, incorruptible God comes and touches this corruptible earth. And that's why we had to talk about what in Romans chapter 8, how the very earth, the creation itself, is corrupted. Even in the very rocks, there's corruption. So when he comes and touches this earth, end of story. Okay, big trouble. Big, big, big trouble. So, the demons and Satan bound and released later. It shall come to pass in that day the Lord will punish on high the host of exalted ones on the earth, the kings of the earth. They'll be gathered together as the prisoners are gathered in the pit. And after many days will be punished. He laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who was the devil and Satan, bound him for 1,000 years, and he cast him into the bottomless pit. And shut him up and set a seal on him that they should deceive the nations no longer till the 1,000 years were finished. But after these things, he must be released for a little while. Now I kept thinking, well, how long is a little while? God, why don't you just tell us? You know, why do you make it so enigmatic? You know, I think I found the clue. I'll let you guys be the judge and jury of that, though. So Daniel chapter 7, what verse was that? I don't know. So here you've got the beast was slain, its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. That's the same as Revelation chapter 19, right? And it says, as for the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Now the word time here, we find that elsewhere, don't we? We find time, times and half a time, right? Which we're told is 1,260 days, which we're told is 42 months. Okay? So a time must be a year. A time, times and half a time. That's a year. It's the same word. So, and the season, that must be the 1,000 years, yes? They're thrown in for 1,000 years. It's prolonged for a season and a time. So I would suggest that the brief period that Satan is released is a year. That gives him, I suppose, sufficient time to go out and, you know, do his dirty business. But doesn't, if that's the case, look how patient God is. All right, you get a year. Go do your stuff. You get a year, and if anybody will follow you, fine. You know? I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And he has sufficient time, apparently, to go and to convince the entire, well, not the entire world, but many in the world to come with him. He'll go out to the sea of the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, and gather them together to battle, whose number is as the sand of the sea. They went up on the breadth of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city. And fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. Now this camp of the saints, well, there's just too much to talk about, I have to say. The camp of the saints is what is talked about in Ezekiel chapters 40 through 40, well, I guess 48, basically. But so you have the camp of the saints of the Jews, and the beloved city. What's that city? Well, it's, of course, it's the New Jerusalem. And notice here, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. Now, it's not that God is way up there in heaven as we understand it today. Heaven, aka God's abode, has come down here. And he just happens to be sitting at the top. How do we know that? Because we're told that, right? Where did Satan want to ascend to? To the mountain of the congregation, right? He wants to sit on the farthest sides of the north to show that he's the head honcho. Well, who's up there already? Sorry, throne's taken. Right? God's already on the throne. I'm not moving. Sorry, I'm not moving my throne for you. Right? Down with you. So he's on there. He's on this mountain already, the mountain, the holy mountain of the Lord. So he's already there, and now this is his last attempt to take the city. And now, is there some big battle? I don't see any. I just see smoke, just poof. Right? And we've talked about the millennial sacrifices that are going to take place. Why would there be blood sacrifices in the millennium? What's the point? I mean, kill some animals just to remember? I don't know. Seems kind of weak a little bit. I submit that the blood sacrifices are a very necessary condition, because those who remain mortals will need some kind of a covering, an atonement, if you will, to be able to exist in close proximity to God's glory. They need a spacesuit. They need a hazmat suit. They need a force field. And that's what the blood is going to do. It's going to actually give them a protection, a covering. It's a provisional covering until they make up their minds. And obviously, once the 1,000 years are ended, well, I don't know if it's obvious, but it's apparent that the sacrifices end. And guess what? You get close to the city, you're going to get burned, right? You play with fire, you're going to get burned. So here, you know, God just up there, he's watching them. He kind of laughs in derision. Why do the nations rage, you know, and plot against his anointed? Here they come. All right, you know. You know, he just lets the fire just comes out, because that's who he is. And if you get too close without your hazmat suit on, you're toasted. So there's no final battle here. They're prepared for battle, but there's no battle that takes place. It's just God's fire comes down from heaven, boom, they're done. Okay. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, and this is, of course, ties in with our discussion from before. See this word right here, then? Did you know that that is not in the Greek? And so many translations have the word then. Now, why do I point that out? See, it's the word kai. Kai just means and. There's another word for then. It's tote. Why not use that word if he wants to say then? So I don't know why the translators did that. I mean, I kind of understand, you know, but I think they should have stuck with the word "and," because it kind of gives this impression that, well, this and then this and then this, but really what's happening is I saw this, and I saw this, and I saw this, and I saw this.
Seems like sequence.
Yeah, The then puts it in the sequence. It sounds like, well, this is going to happen, then this is going to happen, then this is going to happen. But it's no. I saw this, and I saw this, and I saw this, but I can only tell you them one at a time. Okay? So, that's why I think this, the Great White Throne, is more of a, you know, the court's open every day. And he's just giving, he sees this, this is the, one of the last visions he sees. Getting close, anyway. And he kind of describes, you know, this courtroom. Okay, here's the courtroom. Here's what's going to happen in court. Your day in court will look something like this. Right? And you've got these books, the Book of Life. And if you're in the sea, that's going to give them up. Death and Hades deliver up those who are in them. And what's fascinating is that death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. Which is interesting. It almost sounds like they are entities.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Anyway.
Death and Hades won't be necessary anymore.
Yeah, they won't be necessary. They won't be welcomed.
They'll be absorbed.
Yeah.
By the lake of fire. Because the abode will then be the lake of fire. They won't be death. Won't
yeah.
be necessary.
Yeah.
Hades won't be necessary.
Are you talking about Hades as a place or Hades as an entity?
As a place.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder if it could be an entity though, because you know, God mocks them in Hosea. You know, "Oh death, where is your sting?" Right? So it's almost like he's kind of talking to this one. He's also known as Abaddon, the destroyer, and in the Book of Job it talks about them as well. Well, okay. So heavens shake, earth burned, seas blood. So he showed these wonders. We already read that. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision, the sun and moon will grow dark. We read that as well. I was just trying to pair these so that you could see them next to each other. And the first angel sounded, hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown into the earth, and the third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were dark, and a third of the day did not shine, likewise the night. And I will show wonders in heaven above, and signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor and smoke. The sun will return to darkness, and the moon into blood, before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. And then 2D... Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look to the on the earth beneath, for the heavens will vanish away like smoke. The earth will grow old like a garment, and those who dwell in it will die in like manner. But my salvation will be forever, and my righteousness will not be abolished. The mountains melt like wax at the presence of the Lord, at the presence of the Lord of the whole earth. I beheld the earth, and indeed it was without form and void, and the heavens, they had no light. Of old you laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will endure. Yes, they will all grow old like a garment, like a cloak. You will change them, and they will be changed. Bow down your heavens, O Lord, and come down, touch the mountains, and they shall smoke. Moreover, the Lord who rules over all says, in just a little while I will once again shake the sky and the earth and the sea and the dry ground. This is going to be kind of scary when the Lord comes back. I'm a little bit nervous already. Now, here we got something in Matthew. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Now, I put a note in there, which day? Well, it seems to be the day when the heavens and earth pass away. And that is because it happens when Jesus returns. So, why did the heavens and earth pass away? On account of his return. And that appears to be the day in which the heaven and earth are going to pass away. If I'm reading that correctly, maybe not. But the heavens and the earth, which are now preserved by the same word, are reserved for fire until the day of judgment and perdition of godly men. So the heavens and earth are preserved, and they're reserved for fire until when? The day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. And as, of course, we read on there, the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night, which we read. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. So the righteousness, we read about that in Isaiah chapter 11. There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. His delight is in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of his ears. But with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his loins, and faithfulness the belt of his waist. So this is the time that Peter was talking about. You see, 1st and 2nd Peter were written to the Jews. They're written to the elect, who are the Jews. And 1st and 2nd Peter are just chock full of references to the Old Testament that you would need a fairly sophisticated audience to understand all these allusions he keeps mentioning. They're all over the place. So what they're looking to, so he's making reference to the so-called Messianic Age, or what we call the Millennium. And of course, this is the time when the wolf was going to dwell with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, the calf the young lion, the fountain together, a little child shall lead them, the cow and the bear shall graze, the young ones shall lie down together, the lion shall eat straw like the ox, etc. And it says, they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. Fascinating. We'll talk more about that later. But so this is that time. In Hebrews, you, Lord, in the beginning laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you remain, and they will all grow old like a garment, like a cloak. You will fold them up, and they will be changed. But you are the same, and your years will not fail. Oof. I love it. All right, so let's look at the parousia, in other words, the coming of the Lord. Oh boy! Are we all together?
Yeah.
Okay. It's number three. When God returns, behold, the Lord is riding on a swift cloud and comes to Egypt, and the idols of Egypt will tremble at his presence, and the heart of the Egyptians will melt within them. Where do we see God riding on a swift cloud? Where else do we see that? Isaiah 66, verse 15. Remember that? We saw that just up above there. Isaiah 66, 15. See, where did we see that? It's in there. Where it is on my thing here. Okay, for the Lord will come with fire and with his chariot like a whirlwind to render his anger and fury. By the way, God really does have a chariot. Okay?
And horses.
And horses! Now, why does God need horses and chariots? Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Because he likes them. He doesn't need them. But it looks cool. You know? You gotta come with style, you know? Can't come on foot. He's a great king, you know? I think I'll make something to carry me around, you know? I could do it myself, but there's not much class in that, you know? Yeah, he's a great king. So, you know, and what we find is, you know, remember in 2 Kings 20, where Elijah and his servant are surrounded by the Syrians, and his servant wakes up in the morning, "Oh, master, what are we going to do? Oh, Lord, just open his eyes," right?
Yeah.
And they see the horses and chariots of fire. So the angels, or demons, right, or both, apparently go around in chariots too. I don't know why. They got wings. Why do they need wings, right? Why do angels need wings anyway? So, see, we've made a lot of assumptions about that realm that we think are true. Well, you can think and you're there. Well, maybe you can, maybe you can't. Maybe you got to somehow be transported with a chariot or with wings. You know, so I think that we've kind of made some assumptions that are not necessarily true. But anyway. Pardon? Yeah, we're going to come back on horses. Maybe you should take lessons now.
I'm doing that.
Good. You're going to be like ahead of them. Wait up! How'd you get so good? You said take lessons. All right, another great passage talking about when the Lord comes back. Isaiah 63. Who is this who comes from Eden in crimson garments and from Bozrah? He who is splendid in his apparel, marching in the greatness of his strength. Remember there in Revelation 19 where the heavens are going to open up and Jesus is on his horse and the armies of heaven are following behind him? Jude says that the Lord comes with 10,000s of his saints, which we also find in the book of Deuteronomy. It's going to be glorious. Oof, it's going to be good. It is I, speaking in righteousness, mighty to save. Who's that? Who speaks in righteousness? Isaiah certainly didn't, right? He said, "Woe am I, I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell among a people of unclean lips." You think Isaiah was bad? You should see his people, right? "Why is your apparel red, and your garments like his who treads in the winepress? I have trod in the winepress alone and from the peoples. No one was with me. I trod them in my anger and trampled them in my wrath. Their lifeblood splattered on my garments and stained all my apparel." I was reading this one day in theology class, and one of my students was like, "This doesn't sound like Jesus." I said, "Well, it's time to change your understanding of Jesus, because he is a great and mighty warrior. He's not a pushover God. He is a radical king. And, ooh, you don't want to be on the wrong side when he comes back. Now, he's loving. We're good. We're glad about that. But, you know, today is the day of salvation. You got to make your decision. "So I trod in my anger and trampled in my wrath. Their lifeblood spread on my garments and stained all my apparel. For the day of vengeance was in my heart and my year of redemption has come. I looked, but there was no one to help. I was appalled, but there was no one to uphold. So my own arm brought me salvation, and my wrath upheld me. I trampled down the peoples in my anger. I made them drunk in my wrath, and I poured out their lifeblood on the earth." Oh, go, Lord. Man. Okay. "Jesus said to them, 'You have said so, but I tell you, from now on you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven.'" 2 Thessalonians. "Then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord Jesus will kill with the breath of his mouth and bring to nothing by the appearance of his coming." You see how powerful just the appearance of the Lord is? His glory is just going to be enough to destroy his enemies. "Then I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse. The one sitting on it is called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and makes war. His eyes are like a flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems, and he has a name written that no one knows but himself. He is clothed in a robe dipped in blood." Now, this isn't Jesus' blood. Okay, some people think, "Oh, that's the blood of the Lamb." No, it's not. That's the blood of the people he just trampled on. Okay? "And the name by which he is called is the Word of God. and the armies of heaven arrayed in fine linen, white and pure. We're following him on white horses. That's us. From his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron. He will tread the winepress of the fury of the wrath of God the Almighty. On his robe and on his thigh he has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Then I saw an angel standing in the sun with a loud voice. He called to all the birds that fly directly overhead, Come, gather for the great supper of God, to eat the flesh of kings and the flesh of captains, the flesh of the mighty men, the flesh of horses and their riders, and the flesh of all men, both free and slave, both small and great. And I saw the beasts and the kings of the earth with their armies gathered to make war against him who was sitting on the horse and against his army. And the beast was captured, and with it the false prophet who was in its presence, who had done signs by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and would worship its image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur, and the rest were slain by the sword that came from the mouth of him who was sitting on the horse, and all the birds were gorged with their flesh. Now, if we look at Habakkuk chapter 3, God comes from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran. Selah, his splendor covers the heavens, and the earth is full of his praise. Now, if you read the King James or New King James, it says God came from. But if you look at the Hebrew, it's clearly a future tense. And that is confirmed by the Septuagint, where it's a future tense. So at least the NASB puts it in the present, which has, it has future implications. So the earth is full of his praise. His radiance is like the sunlight. He has rays flashing from his hand, and there is the hiding of his power. Before him goes pestilence, and plague comes after him. He stood and surveyed the earth. He looked and startled the nations. Yes, the perpetual mountains were shattered. The ancient hills collapsed. His ways are everlasting. Did the Lord rage against the rivers? Or was your anger against the rivers? Or was your wrath against the sea that you rode on your horses, on your chariots of salvation? Your bow was made bare. The rods of chastisement were sworn. Selah. You cleaved the earth. Remember that in Isaiah where it says the earth will be split open? Same language. You cleaved the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and quaked. The downpour of water swept by. The deep uttered forth its voice. It lifted high its hands. Sun and moon stood in their places. They went away at the light of your arrows, at the radiance of your gleaming spear. In indignation you marched to the earth. In anger you trampled the nations. You went forth for the salvation of your people, which is of course Israel. For the salvation of your anointed, you struck the head of the house of the evil to lay him open from high to neck, Selah. You pierced him with his own spears, the head of his throngs. They stormed in to scatter us. Their exultation was like those who devour the oppressed in secret. You trampled on the sea with your horses, on the surge of many waters. Ooh, again. So this is what the coming of the Lord is going to look like. Daniel gives us more insight. I saw in the night visions, behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like a son of man, and he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him, and to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and a kingdom, one that shall not be destroyed. As I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. He shall speak words against the Most High, and shall swear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change the times and the law, and they shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. But the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away to be consumed and destroyed in the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of his kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. Their kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey them. Thoughts? Please, say some.
Yeah. Do you think that the unsaved are in hell now, are they just judged throughout the millennium?
Well, again, when we talk about hell now, we're talking about a place called Hades. And we remember back to Luke 17, where the rich man and Lazarus were both in Hades, Lazarus was in the place known as Abraham's bosom, a place of comfort, also known as paradise, whereas the rich man was in a place of torment. So that place of torment, as far as we understand, is going to be emptied out at the great white throne judgment, which I suppose is going to happen after the millennium, as far as I can tell. I don't know. But, you know, will those people remain there during the time of the millennium and then get transferred? But see, the question is, if you, let's say you make it through the tribulation and you're part of the goats, are you put into Hades? Or you go, you know, don't pass go, don't collect your $200, you go straight to jail, right? You go straight to the lake of fire. It, to me, the language seems to say that you're going straight to the lake of fire, because that's the place that was created for Satan and all of his angels. Hades seems to be kind of a pit stop. In fact, the whole thing about Hades, I mean, just the more I keep looking at that, Hades and death really seem to be they seem to be entities. They seem to be entities that are, for example, Job 26:5. Sheol, which is the Hebrew word for that, Sheol, is naked before him, and destruction has no covering. You've got hell and destruction are before the Lord, so how much more the hearts of the sons of men? The word for destruction is abaddon in Hebrew. And we're told in Revelation 9, and they had as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon. So there's another clue for us. So, you know, all I'm trying to figure out is, are these entities, they seem to be demons. So there's a place known as Hades. There seems to be an angel or a demon known as kind of the lord of this place. And, you know, he seems to have power. He has the power of death. We're told that Satan has the power of death, but Jesus overcame him. Right? So Jesus says, I have overcome. I have the keys of Hades and death, which is fascinating. So are we talking about, you know, Hades as in, I've got the key to the room, or I've got Mr. Hades' keys, you know? It kind of sounds like it's a both scenario. There's an angel named as Hades, and he keeps ward over the people in there, which we call Hades the place. So that's part of the confusion, at least in my mind, is trying to figure out, is it simply a place, or is it also a person, a demon? And I think it's both.
Yeah, I've always thought that.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's both. But open to further investigation.
Reminds me of just that popular idea of the angel of death. You know, I mean, how that just gotten into the way people picture death.
Yeah, the angel of death, yeah. Yeah, you know, the Grim Reaper kind of idea. You know, whether he goes around with a black hood on. But there seems to be something to that, at least a little bit, because there Paul says in 1 Corinthians, he says here, if we brought to pass what is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your sting? O Hades, where is your victory? And this is, of course, taken from Hosea 13. I will ransom them from the power of the grave. I will redeem them from death. O death, I will be your plagues. O grave, I will be your destruction. Pity is hidden from my eyes. Now we could say, well, this is just personification. It's sort of figurative language. That's a possibility, I guess. But I like the other option. I really think that that God is talking to demonic powers that actually have authority over death. Because remember, Adam forfeited. He forfeited the earth. He forfeited his life. And he became a slave to death. And all of his children with him. Right? So we're in bondage to that because of what Adam did. So, and we know that there are all these demons out there. They're doing all kinds of nasty stuff. So, you know, from the power of the grave, which incidentally in Hebrew, from the power of, from the hand of Sheol. That's interesting. And the same thing from Mavet. So, you know, it's almost like God is taunting you guys. I'm going to win them back. What does it say in Ephesians? That Jesus, he led captivity captive, making a public spectacle. Remember that? Making a public spectacle of the principalities and powers. Let's see. Okay, sorry, Colossians 2:15. Having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in it. So, these principalities and powers are demons. We know that from Daniel chapter 10. And he did something so radical, and they didn't see it coming. You know, all of a sudden it was checkmate. Whoa, where did that come from, you know? And the other thing is he hasn't cleared the board yet. Yeah, you're in checkmate, but I'll let you sit there for a little bit. You know? And then I'm going to wipe you off the board. So he disarmed them. These guys are done. They know it. But they're going to, you know, keep fighting with whatever they have, to whatever it takes. All right, so what we see is the heavens and earth are utterly decimated. I hope that's clear. They're decimated. They are kaput. It's lights out for the earth after the tribulation. As if the tribulation weren't bad enough, then Jesus comes. And it's really lights out for the earth. And there's only going to be two sets of heavens and earth. John says, I saw a new heavens and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away. So there can't be three. You know, if you're a gap theorist, you believe in four. But there's only two. There are only two. So based on that, if the earth is in such I can't think of the strong enough word to express it, but just such a chaotic, destroyed condition. What will he do for the millennium? Will he leave in that condition? It's going to need some serious work, right? And all the seas have turned to blood, right? All the fish have died. All the mountains have disappeared. The islands have fled away. It's a cesspool. It's disgusting. It's a garbage heap. It's a sewer. You don't want to live on the earth after all that. It's a what?
It's a big biohazard. Then it's burned up totally.
Yeah. So this is why when he comes back, his presence is going to, apparently, you know, it's going to burn it up. The heavens and earth fled from his face, right? They said, hide us from the face of the Lamb. So that's when that Revelation 20:11 event You know, I saw a great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face earth and heaven fled away. That happened at the second coming. This is the one I'm talking about, this guy. Remember the one that I told you about, all these things happened? This is the one sitting on the throne. So we read that differently. Not that it happens when John sees it, but it happens at the second coming. Those are the times when all those things happen. And so that would explain it, the Revelation 20:11 passage. So he has to create new heavens and a new earth
instantly.
At the beginning. Yeah, apparently instantly. I'm still wondering about the 75 days. You know, does he take a couple of days to...
He's got
to
get rid of his enemies.
Yeah, maybe he destroys the enemies first and then he makes it. You know, maybe the earth is just kind of melting while he's there. Help, quick, you know. I don't know.
Maybe it'll be in a moment, in an instant, and when our bodies are changed.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Things can be done in a twinkling of an
eye. I'm just guessing because there's not enough scriptures that I've found to give me the right answer. But as you know, those 75 days are divided between the 30 and then 45 more. And to me, there's two functions going on. One is the judgment, but the other is elevating the Israelites.
Uh-huh.
To their position.
Interesting, yeah. So the
Jeremiah 31, verse 31 to 34.
Okay.
So that's where the promise is kept for God's new covenant.
Yeah, so the new covenant and the 30 days and the 45 days.
So good things happening and good things happening.
So you got good things and bad things happening.
Yeah.
Probably, you think the bad comes first or the good comes first?
Don't know,
yeah. Yeah.
They both have to get done.
I think he can do several things at a time.
Yeah, he is a good multitasker. Yeah, so maybe... Yeah, maybe he can... I'll do them both at the same time. Yeah. Well, we're just trying to figure out all the clues that Scripture gives us. Because he gave them to us for some reason. I don't know. Maybe he could have just said, don't worry about it. I'll tell you when you get there. But he told us all these things. Right? Because he wanted us to know. So... That's why I think when we look at all the evidence together, we look at the big picture, then you have to have a new heavens and a new earth at the beginning. So
I'm a number freak. What would you guess would be the population that survived? Of all those who entered the 7 years, you know how many of the Jews are going to survive? A third of them.
Okay, well, I would estimate that probably... 750 million people are going to be raptured, roughly 11% of the earth. And then from the estimates that I've seen, it appears that roughly 4/5 of the remaining population will be wiped out.
Just by going through the 21 judgments of the Revelation? But it sounds like...
Two-fourths?
No, two-thirds.
Two-thirds?
You said four-fifths.
Well, of the entire world.
Right.
Out of the Jews... two-thirds will be destroyed. So actually, it's better than the rest of the world, right? If that's the case.
And after the goats are taken out.
Pardon?
Where'd you get the four-fifths from?
Well, it's just looking at all the events, because they keep, you know, saying a third is going to be wiped out. So a third here and a third there. You know, it's a guesstimate. I don't know. But if I just kind of look at the different... all the different judgments, it seems like in the end you're left with about 1/5 that makes it through. And he says that he's going to make men more rare, more rare than the gold of Ophir. So one time I tried to look up how much gold is there in Ophir. But I don't know. I don't know how to divide it. You put it divided by ounces or I don't know. But
so then after the goat nations are gone, Israel is a fairly high percentage of the total population then.
Yeah. Yeah, Israel's pretty... quite a bit, yeah. So, well, guys, thank you. Exciting class. Thank you for participating. And, you know, read up next time on what's coming. So, the new heavens and earth created at the beginning of the millennium, New Jerusalem. We'll talk about Jerusalem as the bride. So, reader 4 through 6 for next week. And if you have questions about your timeline, let me help.
Oh, sure.
Rick, oh, is that you got that from somewhere else?
Go to what?